Mr. Clarkson, reel 47.
And I remember one occasion we had a captain of Marines, Captain Sparrow, mentioned in that, well, he's not mentioned in that book now, he was a great fellow for running reviews and all that sort of thing, a very clever man, but that was his only qualification. Otherwise, he was a bit dim. But he had charge of the Marines on the aft deck for cleaning purposes. That was his part of the ship. And on one occasion in Malta, the Marine Major was going ashore to a dinner. And to his flunky, a blue Marine, get my suit out, dinner jacket suit and shirt, cufflinks and everything, while I'm having a bath, I'll be all ready to go ashore. And he did, but when the Major came back, getting to his clothes, they'd gone. And where's my clothes? He said to his blanket. He said, I put them outside on the chair there, so they're gone. And then one of the Marines said, I saw Captain Sparrow around here with a scran bag shortly. Short time ago. Oh, the Major, he went mad. He had Captain Sparrow up there with a scran bag, and there was his beautiful white shirt and his cufflinks all wrapped up with all sorts of junk. He really went to town on him. But that was where anything that was sculling went. You could see when there was an inspection once a week when the captain went round with the bugler, the master at arms, the officer of the mess deck and all, a long trail of them. And as they went from this department into the next one, you'd see a scurrying of figures carrying various bundles, diving round and making a detour and getting round behind him. Then as soon as he'd passed along, saw all this lot would be stowed away in the usual places.
And these sort of things that you said, I mean, one of the First War, some of the changes that came out of the First War were an accommodation in the sense that you had, as we said.
Oh, yes, great improvements.
Great improvements.
Bathrooms, to start off with.
Yes.
But, and they, the only system they had, they didn't have, I believe they had drying rooms in some ships.
Some ships after this.
But, yes, but the routine before that, that was even when things were getting improved. Mm. You had to bring your washing up once a week and stop it onto the jackstay. Mm. And that was all hoisted up, just like dress ship. I don't know where they get all the flags up. Well, that would be all clothing. Mm. That was a great thing. The bathrooms and the messes.
What about the mess room accommodation? What about the mess room furniture and things? What sort of things would you get there?
Well, from basins.
Basins.
They went to cups and saucers. That was the basins that must have lasted for donkey's years, I should think. And the only people who had cups and saucers were chief POs. Well, then I think they came down to everybody after that. Mm. And the clothing, of course, was... That was altered where we used to have for duck caps. We only had blue caps. And is this like a canvas cover it was used to put on them? Well, that was done away with, and then they were allowed to have these tiddly caps, as they call them, that they could buy ashore. But now, I see they are a general issue.
Yes.
The only people that ever had those respectable caps were those that had served in Hong Kong or somewhere like that. That's where they used to get them from.
Tiddly caps being the ones with a white top?
Yes, white top.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And they're a nice shape. Mm-hmm. But the others, by the time you've got these covers on, mm-hmm. the buttoned at the back,
yes.
you had a flat hat. Yes. Just like a pudding it was.
Yeah.
These
sort of things you quite remember then as being different. And in the accommodation, I think we also had lockers, we were saying earlier there.
Yes, lockers.
Instead of bags,
yes. And then they introduced cooks into the Navy, mm-hmm. where the previous cooks were just, all they done was boil the hot water and push the stuff in. that you had to make your own dough and everything. You had to make that yourself with no experience at all. You're expected to be a cook. Then they stopped that lot and introduced cooks. They think, well, say we had two cooks in a cruiser, a PO and an ordinary cook. Well, then they'd have about six. Then they'd have bakeries where we used to go to see with about 3 days' supply of bread and the remainder on biscuits. They had bakeries where they used to bake every day. Oh, there was all sorts of improvements.
And you yourself came out of the Navy in 37 and went to the prison service.
Yes.
How did you find it leaving the Navy? I mean, after that's 25 years, is a long time.
Yeah, well...
How did you find settling down, generally?
I felt absolutely lost for the first few days. It seemed as if I'd broken a link of survival, if you like. I was while I was in the Navy, I knew that I wasn't going to starve. I knew that I had some money to come every fortnight when they used to pay us. I had somewhere to sleep and that sort of thing. But I was out in the cold, cold world, and I'd look after myself. The Navy made you dependent on them. It's just like a fellow going into prison. He's got he's looked after and he's sure of his meals. When he comes out, he's lost. I can understand that now. But I wasn't out of work for long. Just a matter of 10 days. That was all.
10 days. And you found that there was a problem though in the first few days, at any rate, of adjusting to this new environment.
Yes.
This new world. You said there that it was like prison. You know, in a way, and you can understand. A lot of people have compared ships with prisons because, again, like the prisoner, the Navy man has his bed and his breakfast and his meals,
yes,
and his whole life is programmed, much the way the prisoner's life is programmed. Can you see?
Yeah, very much like it, because in the Navy, say if you're away for 2.5 years, you're living on the job, you're sleeping on it, and you're under discipline all the time. You're under more discipline than you are in a prison. All you've got to do in the prison is do as you're told.
Cooperate.
And there's nobody ever suffers in the prison unless they try to be brutal to any of the staff, anything like that. But they... I've often told them, when some of them had a moan on, that I've suffered far much more than they have for doing the right thing and not the wrong thing.
Can I just open that up a bit? You say that they suffer far less in the prison. You know, I seem to think that in the prison, if you just cooperate with the system, it doesn't impose itself on you. You just...
Life.
Whereas the Navy, it's always there.
There's always somebody to... The biggest job in life is keeping clear of trouble. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might oversleep in the morning. That is a crime. You mustn't do that. Our commander von Troop, who used to... He had a special hatred for POs and chiefs. He seemed like waiting for that bugle to go over morning. And then pouncing. Come on, come on, you're not out yet. And you were being chased all the time. You had a certain time to do everything. To get yourself washed. To get your breakfast quick. To fall in. And if you were a cook of the mess... You didn't have the time to do anything. You had to do it, and they knew you had to do it. It was like something that Commander Fitzherbert said to me once when he was running a stage show, and he wanted these guardrails for this stage show, and he told us where to take them from. And when we took them down, he was going to put some report for it. When I said, it was your order, sir. You said you wanted these down. He said, yes, but I didn't want to see them down. That sort of thing, you see. You had to do so much, which was not on the book, if you like. You had to do so much and use your wit and cunning to complete these jobs that should have been done in an open way, if you like.
Yes. Yeah, there was a lot of surreptitious manipulating, in a way.
Yes.
You say, to stay alive, almost. You had to be...
You take a Saturday's routine on a ship. Now you've got to work. Your job has got to go along. You've probably got an important job, a boat been smashed up, and you're working on it. It's on the other end of the ship. Your shop is down the forward end. And you're trying to get up. Every place is barricaded up where they're scrubbing and cleaning. And it takes you an hour. And every time you go to step somewhere, someone shouts at you. You're in the wrong. You've trodden on something that's just been cleaned. And you've got to get right the other end of the ship. And then you're doing a job. And if you're making a shave or making any dust or anything like that, you've got the officer of that part of the ship or the captain of the top complaining and groaning to you. You've got to do everything without it being known that you've done it.
And if you haven't done it, of course, that's also a fault.
Oh, yes.
Presumably.
Oh, yes. I have nightmares. Now, I had one the night before last again, and it's usually the same thing. We're in a foreign place, and I'm hurrying back to the ship. Like the night before last, I woke my wife up and told them. I said, well, I've just made it. And I had that. I'd come back and they'd shifted the ship. And I was, there was the ship over there. And I had to go right away around there to get to it. And we're sailing. We're sailing at midnight. And it's 5 to 12. I did manage to get there. And all the time that, for the hour, we'll say that I was trying to get there, I was thinking all the time, isn't this all right? I don't want to break my leave. I don't intend to, but everything seems to be against it. And it's not a bit of use me saying that I tried. I'll never be believed. You're not supposed to be believed at all. And I'm going to not only have to lose a day's pay and a day's leave, but it suddenly occurs to me I'm married, although I wasn't then, you see. And also that it's the future. It's like a black mark on your character for that year. You've got to think a long way ahead. How much is that going to cost you? For instance, a case in Portsmouth of an officer, mentioned in there, a fellow with tons of money. He goes ashore at night in Portsmouth at the same time a blacksmith goes ashore. Funny enough, they both use the same pub, the Goat, up at Southsea. They both get drunk. The officer, he's locked up at the Guildhall for driving a car, being drunk. The blacksmith, he's also locked up. And both of them smashed their cells up there, but it. The next morning, the commander goes ashore to bail the lieutenant out. And he appeals on his behalf that this is out of the ordinary for this officer to do, and how would it ruin his career and everything. He's lost his hat. The commander takes ashore another hat for him, and he's let off. Comes aboard in the commander's car. Actually, we never heard anything about it, but it didn't do him any harm because he got promotion all that later on. But the blacksmith, he wasn't bailed out. Oh, no. An escort marched him out eventually. He paid his fine, a great big article in the paper about it, and he comes aboard and then he's punished by warrant. He's deprived of one good conduct badge, leave stopped for a month, rum stopped for a month. Needless to say, he's lost his good conduct medal, which means, apart from the money that he gets at 15 years, there's all the money he loses on his pension when he takes it. In time, it's costing him hundreds of pounds. But that's the difference between an officer and a gentleman, and a blacksmith and a blackguard. There's lots of things like that that bite, but you can't kick against them. If you do, all you do is give yourself a pain in the stomach and ulcers, worrying and thinking. You've got to more or less knuckle down to everything and treat everything as, well, that's the way it should be, I suppose, and we can't grumble. We must just do as we're told and carry on. Serps, that's all the